radiates outwards before stretching and breaking against the bow. The rowing boat follows the grey rock wall, past the fishing trawlers and yachts, until it reaches a narrow shingle beach. The lone occupant jumps out and drags the boat higher up the stones, where it cants drunkenly sideways, looking clumsy on land. Elegance lost. The hood of an anorak is pushed back, and hair explodes from inside. True red hair. Red as flame. Red as the daybreak. She takes a hairband from her wrist, looping the tresses into a single bundle that falls down the centre of her back. My breath has fogged up the window of my room. Tugging my sleeve over my fist, I wipe the small square pane of glass to get a better view. She's finally here. I have been waiting 6 days. I have walked the footpaths, visited the lighthouse, and exhausted the menu at O'Neill's bar and restaurant. I have read the morning newspapers and 3 discounted novels, and listened to the local drunks tell me their life stories. Fishermen, mostly, with hands as gnarled as knobs of ginger and eyes that squint into brightness when there is no sun. Leaning into the rowing boat, she pulls back a tarpaulin, revealing plastic crates and cardboard boxes. This is her fortnightly shopping trip for supplies. With her hands full of boxes, she climbs the steps from the beach and crosses the cobblestones. My eyes follow her progress as she walks along the promenade, past shuttered kiosks and tourist shops, towards a small supermarket, with a light burning inside. Stepping over a bundle of newspapers, she knocks on the door. A middle-aged man, red-nosed and rosy-cheeked, raises a blind and nods in recognition. He turns the deadlock and ushers her inside, pausing to scan the street, looking for me, perhaps. He knows I've been waiting. Dressing quickly in jeans and a sweatshirt, I pull on my boots and descend the pub stairs to a side entrance. The air outside smells of drying seaweed and wood smoke, and the distant hills are edged in orange where God has opened the furnace door and stoked the coals for a new day. The bell jangles on a metal arm. The shopkeeper and the woman turn towards me. They're each holding matching mugs of steam. She braces herself, as if ready to fight or flee, but holds her ground. She looks different from her photographs. Smaller. Her face is windburned, and her hands are calloused, and her left thumbnail is blackened where she has jammed it between 2 hard objects. "Sasha Hopewell?" I ask. She reaches into the pocket of her anorak. For a moment I imagine a weapon. A fishing knife or a can of mace. "My name is Cyrus Haven. I'm a psychologist. I wrote to you." "That's him," says the shopkeeper. "The one who's been asking after you. Should I sick Roddy onto him?" I don't know if Roddy is a dog or a person. Sasha pushes past me and begins collecting groceries from the shelves, loading a trolley, choosing sacks of rice and flour, tins of vegetables and stewed fruit. I follow her down the aisle. Strawberry jam, long life milk, peanut butter. 7 years ago, you found a child in a house in North London. She was hiding in a secret room."
"You had me mistaken for someone else," she says, brusquely.
I pull a photograph from my jacket pocket. "This is you." She gives the image a cursory glance and continues collecting dry goods. The picture shows a young special constable dressed in black leggings and a dark top. She's carrying a filthy, feral child through the doors of a hospital. The young girl's face is obscured by wild, matted hair as she clings to Sasha like a koala to a tree. I pull another photograph from my pocket. "This is what she looks like now." Sasha stops suddenly. She can't help but look at the picture. She wants to know what became of that little girl. Angel face. The girl in the box. A child then. A teenager now. The photograph shows her sitting on a concrete bench, wearing torn jeans and a baggy jumper with a hole in one elbow. Her hair is longer and dyed blonde. She scowls rather than smiles at the camera. "I have others," I say. Sasha looks away, reaching past me and plucking a box of macaroni from the shelf. "Her name is Evie Cormack. She's living in a secure children's home." She grips the trolley and keeps moving. "I could go to prison for telling you any of this. There's a Section 39 order that forbids anybody from revealing her."